glad that you all managed to find your way here. We are here today to celebrate the reissuing of this book about Bernard Ripple. Say a little bit more about the author in a few moments. At this point, I would say that the book is dedicated to, I quote, the past and current presidents of Xuxi University, Bernard Rebel, Samuel Belkin, Norman Lamb, and Richard Penn Joel. This is a distinguished and illustrious quartet. And to begin the morning by saying I'm pleased to introduce the fourth member of that quartet.
Thank you. Today I think I'm the basso profundo member of the quartet to introduce my voice, but I just would feel the pleasure to sing in Shura Bhagava, and it's gotten to my voice. But it's a particular privilege to be here, one that I would not miss, which is so love. First of all, I want to thank, and I'm always thanking, Nikki and Moya Cass for the sponsorship of this and so much in advance. Morty, you know, is vice chair of the board of trustees of the university, and Nikki is an extremely active leader, very active in the student board, and a student of Rebel. So that's very important. And frankly, it's been their impetus as much or more than anyone else that has been the leadership nudge for the revival and the blossoming of the Bernard Rebel Graduate School of Jewish Studies into what Chaim Soloveitcher told me this week was the foremost graduate school of Jewish thought in the country. So everybody's subject to change. And for that, by the way, I have to give much credit to Professor Arthur Heinen and his incredibly youthful senator, Professor David Berger, along with Rabbi Mordechai Cohen, for frankly taking the school that always had excellence and saying is excellence enough for this, shouldn't it be a force in the community? And as it's a force in the community, to me, as the fourth president, I look at this and say that this is the key to Dr. Rebel. It's not just that there's a school that bears his name, names are easy, but that a school that embodies what he represents, which in fact is taking its rightful place and producing the kind of intellectual, academic, and the Torah stars for the world, what it's doing is truly the better Nishmaso. How wonderful to gather with you today through the efforts of the Rebel Graduate School, which frankly is having a much more aggressive attempt to bring its story to our population, and also with the help of the Center for the Jewish Future for what is a momentous occasion. You've lived long enough that your appearance is momentous. It's particularly special for me, as a friend and admirer, and I'd like to say student, of Rav Aaron Repetit, to celebrate his life and his accomplishments. On a very personal note, this event holds importance to me for a special reason. It's through Rav Aaron Repetit's chapters and appendices that I saw that 80 years ago, there was a vision, as articulated by my revered predecessor, Dr. Dov Revels, for the aspirational and inspirational idea of a Torah-informed university at the heart of what would be a Torah-Ummah community. When I saw a vision of Jewish people deeply grounded in Torah while engaged in the world, taking seriously the responsibility to contribute to the common wheel in unique and wonderful ways. For me, it represents a kind of bonding, a cosmic bonding, with the person whose work made my job possible. In his own words, a commencement address at Yeshiva College, I believe in 1933, he said the following: in the great moral crisis facing civilization, whence is to come salvation? The institutions of light and learning, the cathedrals of faith and vision, the homes of the wisdom and the culture of the ages, are in their very being, in their essential impetus, the keepers of the conscience of mankind, the custodians of the free spirit of man. They are the first line of defense of mankind in the long struggle on behalf of human freedom, of the dignity and sanctity of unfettered personality. And that was from the president of Yeshiva in 1933. And so for me, I take great joy in seeing this master work on Rabbi Dr. Rebbe being reissued in a partnership between the YU Press and the OU Press, not merely for the sake of its fascinating historical content, but for the role that it plays in preserving the prose of a movement, the poetry of a contemporary Orthodox reading. Thank you to all the supporters and stakeholders like yourselves. Thanks to our precious students and our esteemed faculty and Rebbeim. The dream is as alive and relevant as ever. And sitting in Jerusalem, we have a Rav and a scholar who makes sure that he keeps our feet to the fire to preserve, enshrine that legacy, and move it forward. Thank you very much.
I'd like to introduce one other person who will welcome you here. In this case, on behalf of the OU and its press, which was responsible for issuing this book, which is obviously a very great relevance to our school. The OU Press reissued this with the support of Mordechai and Monique Katz, who have already been acknowledged by President Joel, and probably do not want me to keep repeating their praises. But I just been told that it's perfectly all right to do that. The trouble is that we only have about an hour or so for this event, which makes it very difficult for me to start engaging in such praises. The activities of Mordechai Katz really are essential, critically important, immensely, overwhelmingly critical to the success of the Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. And I think I will stop here. Rabbi Simon Posner is a central figure of the press and our cosmology's presence. I would like to introduce a person who is A, a Talmud Chacham, B, a common rabbi of influence and importance with political influence as well as religious influence, and the leader for many years of one of the most important Orthodox Jewish institutions and courts of law, namely the OU Constitution. You all know Rabbi Nachman Binat, and I now want to introduce him.
the OU Press is really glad to have been co-publishers in both of these books that were just jointly published, The Silver Hair and also the book about those Reverend Women Reverend. I remember just a few anecdotes and reminiscences. I remember in must be 1969 when Rabbi Wolfcroft, before he was reinvented as Rabbi Kefir, the love was, I remember the occupation, the love was given sheer, usually used to give sheer on the third floor, in the first floor. He was giving in the main, in right across the basement, in 101, the main building, and Rabbi Wolfcroft came into the sheer to bid the love goodbye. And told him he was going to be leaving for Israel. I think if I'm not mistaken, you said that you would be working on a translation of Yerushalmi. Related to Yerushalmi.
I had a contract from Kesher Publishing, the Encyclopedia Judaica, and I told Rebbe I was going to be a staff editor.
But wasn't it Yerushalmi?
Yerushalmi is Yerushalayim.
But I remember meeting at the time. But if you can't understand your Shaman the Hebrew, what's the English translation of that? But now this is the answer for that. And what struck me at the time, which I of course learned more about in subsequent years, was the first of all, the loyalty and devotion of the Talmud coming to bid farewell and to take leave of his Rebbe above, and the reciprocal concern or love that I could see at that moment, that those reciprocal feelings. I just wanted to read, these are two companion books that were published simultaneously. And it's interesting the interplay between them about Rabbi Revel and the Blaze of Silver. Just the Blaze of Silver was an extraordinary figure, like Dov Revel, in American history at that time. And Rabbi Rakefer records in his book about the Blaze of Silver, a letter that the Blaze of Silver wrote on June 10th, 1930, to Dr. Revel. And he says, I am doubly thankful to you for all the beneficial guidance which my sons gained from the walls of your base medrash, the sacred yeshiva. They are filled with the spirit of Torah and authentic Judaism. I will never forget all this was possible because of your influence and that of your house of study. Years later, when Blaze of Silver invited Dr. Revel to his daughter's wedding, he described the room he previously studied in our yeshiva, Rabbi Isaac Alchanan Theological Seminary. I rejoice in him because the influence of the yeshiva still inspires him. I remember the day that Blaze of Silver died and the rug was going to his levaya. He cut the shear short. I remember walking out and I remember him telling me, he said that if the people who have laid silver did a toyver to will be at this funeral, Cincinnati will be filled from one end to the next. But in fact, there was hardly anybody at the funeral, barely a minute. And these great historical figures sometimes, over the course of time, and their contribution is forgotten. And that's part of what motivated Rabbi Rakefer in writing his biography of Dr. Revel. He writes in his introduction to this new book that Bernie Lander, Dr. Lander, who was then the dean of Revel, had suggested to him this topic for his thesis, which ultimately came in his book, because he was so, those who were meeting with him, I mean, if you heard this from Bernie Lander, which was Rabbi Besdin, they subsequently, because there's a devotion named the Dov Revel Yeshiva after Dr. Revel. Great people can often be forgotten, and that was the contributor. And that, and as a, they remember, they represent also a historical model for us. I remember the love saying that the Blaze of Silver Shloshim, he said that when he wants to be Christian, he remember. So he said, when he was speaking to their groups of Orlando, the Russian told them, you don't have to worry about anything about Orlando.
The ancient said, the only one who can worry about that is lazy silver. And God loved him very much. As a matter of fact, his daughter, Willie, when told Lichtenstein, was told her, was married to Baron Lichtenstein, she expected that her father would be sad of Christian. She told him once that to her annoyance, lazy silver showed up at the wedding and was invited, but they didn't expect him to come. And the love is hinted to the sad of Christian. And I think you should also acknowledge that this week, the Baron Lichtenstein is receiving classes for El and Yerushalayim.
Tuesday.
This Tuesday. I learned from both in the book, but also before that, from President Cho, that Rabbi Revel was a great student and admirer of Abraham Lincoln, so I got to like him even more. And Dr. Revel, who was known as the Fred Healy, just another counterpoint, his father, who died when he was a child, 12 years old. Dr. Revel was trained to marry his youth as his medicine. At an early age, 6 years old, he knew big parts of Shas by heart and was tested on Dr. Kahn, knowing many black by heart. He was tested by Eudicius O'Connor, and his father, who died when he was young, 12 years old, was buried next to Eudicius O'Connor. So we see all this serendipity and the relationships between these different people, these great people. With Doug Revel, Frederick Eloy, his brilliance, his vision, his selflessness and devotion, he literally gave up his life for the yeshiva, shouldn't be forgotten, and inspires us in these, the most difficult of times.
I haven't seen these people, but I want to make a shot for younger people. Baruch Hashem, Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shekhidonu V'Kimanu V'Kiyonu L'Azman HaZeh.
Amen.
This is a revised edition. I challenge anyone to find the word I added, the word I changed, and the paragraph I added. And if anyone finds it, I'll tell you the reason why. But it's the first time I'm laying eyes. The Rebbe was delivered to me at the, where I'm staying, the presidential suite of Yeshiva University. And this is the first time when I hold my hands to Suba Iris, fourth edition of the Yesh Chayot Gadol.
Oh, yeah. Rabbi Rakesta is known to everybody who came here, I'm quite sure. And I tend to have to say that he needs no introduction. However, I've learned that this is not a very good idea. So I will provide one, but it will be of necessity truncated. Rabbi Rakesha, I will begin with the fact that he received his doctorate from the Brown Brother Graduate School. But I regret to say that I can't, maybe I shouldn't regret, that I can't put this at the top of the list of his achievements. He has a remarkable resume. He was a congregational rabbi in the United States in his early years. He was a student of the law, as you heard. He has written about the law, important work about the law. He has written about the two rabbis whom you have just heard about, Eliezer Silver and Rabbi Dr. Romero. He has taught for many, many years a variety of centrally important Israeli educational institutions. He was a central player on the clandestine education of Soviet Jewry, which was a project that he engaged in for at least a decade under the auspices of the Mossad. He is a lecturer of enormous skill and talent who has shared his knowledge all over the world. There is a rabbinic term which is applied when the Mishnah or another Tanaitic text provides a list of things. but as anarchists, that would take at least as long as it took to list the ones that I had to do. So it is my pleasure and my honor to introduce Rabbi Rakesh.
First of all, I want to transform this room into my classroom in Yerushalayim. Can everyone hear me well? There's no echo. No me. It's hard to hear. Can the experts figure out how this can be worked out? I'm hearing an echo.
You have to move the microphone a little closer to you and a little higher.
Higher?
Yeah, like that. Try that.
Can you hear me now? Okay. See, Rabbi Richard Jones is an expert in many areas. It's a kitchen sink. You can ask me whether. I begin my lectures because they go on to one. They go on to one in Torah.org. Today is Sunday, May 4th, 2014. I want to say hello to my students in front of me and to all the thousands listening across the world. 45 years ago, and there's a picture in my seventh book where I'm leaving the main academic center at the Talmud, and today is a very famous medical doctor who's holding the door for me. And a few days later, we board a boat, and with my wife and children, we sail for Eretz. About 2 weeks later, we arrive, and in the middle of the night, the Jewish agency transports us and many other families to an absorption center in Yerushalayim. One of the Mekhausen Towers, an absorption center, you're leaving a different country, you're leaving a country where you spoke the language, where you knew how to use the bank, where you knew how to shop, where you knew how to use the bus, and you're coming into a totally different country. And the concept behind the Mekhausen Park was a halfway house, a chance to be with new immigrants, many of them had loans, and Sadat Kaliyah came in and took us, my wife, shopping, taught us how to shop, how to look at the labels. Ulpanim gives you time to adjust, and sooner or later, you become a total Israeli. Why am I telling you this story? When I came to America, at the turn of the last century, in the early 1900s, I was a young kid from Kufa. What did I do in my early years? In Chakuzitz, in Beis Medrash, in Kufa, in Chakulet, like everyone else. My aunts and uncles were in America, I decided to go to America. And suddenly I was overwhelmed. I'm used to a life of learning and davening and correcting my Yiddish. I need a halfway house. And people advised me, go to Henry Street. Afterwards, Montgomery Street. Afterwards, East Broadway. And give it time and consistency and learning and can daven, and little by little become an American. And the yeshiva, which began in 1896, yeshiva Tzokhanam, a continuity of yeshiva Tzokhanam, which began in 1886, I should say Tzokhanam began in 1897, 7 years later. It was a halfway house. And in the early 1900s, and you can read all about this, the doctorate by Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapperman should listen to well, with the early years of the yeshiva. I stood on his shoulders, and I wrote an anti-rebel. I'm still waiting, and I mentioned this to the dean of an anti-rebel. We also go back many, many generations. I mentioned to the dean, you need someone to stand on my shoulders. It's time to have a scholarly work done on Reb Shmuel Belkin. He deserves it. But coming back, Rabbi Kahneman describes the yeshiva fellow sitting and demanding, it's not enough to be in English. We want to learn English. We want a high school education. We want to go on to college. And there were actually strikes in the yeshiva, 1907 and 1908 and 1909, and it's very interesting. The rabbis of the yeshiva more or less agreed that we have to introduce Americanization into the yeshiva. But not the Balabatim. The Balabatim who gave the money said, we are giving money from Israel. This is in Lebanon. What do we need English for? I think I've got enough English to make money in America, and that's all that counts. You'll go out like us, you'll manufacture, you'll have stores. Grace Mishakov that you need a high school that you have to waste time waiting money that you should sit and learn. And it's interesting, it was the Balabatim who actually fought the idea of Americanization. But we have an expression, I quoted it, I gave two talks on Shabbat, one in Mount Sinai and one in Yeshiva, two talks that complemented each other, one on Sfarad Ali Israel and one on the religious situation in Eretz Israel today. And I quoted an aphorism of Martin Hebrew, Marsha lo yaseh ha-seichel yaseh ha-zman, Marsha lo yaseh ha-zman yaseh ha-seichel. I've been so impressed. If I can't elaborate, I can show you the Rav actually said this. This is Drasha on Yosef the Echad. You can apply that aphorism to that Drasha. By 1911-1912, the Balabatim, the Rabbanim, and the students all were in agreement. We have to Americanize the yeshiva. Alright? You want to Americanize the yeshiva? It's like a man says, this year I'm getting married. Beautiful. But the Dachavan Akkadim, you know, the woman you're going to marry, they're going to Americanize the yeshiva, but they need the individual who can do it. And he who have a fairy tale story that's worthy of a full-length movie. Some of you know I enjoy it in a documentary in the Rebbe's world. It's the only achievement in my life that I did single-handedly. Everyone mocked me and laughed at me. And every time I succeeded in getting funding, I was shot down. And then I had a miracle that goes back to my wife's relationship with the Lubavitch family. Her grandparents stopped in Abe Lubavitch's father's shoe. And I have to say, you all have seen the documentary, The Lonely Man of Faith. So, you need the individual. Rabbi Rebbe's life is unreal. Rabbi Rebbe is here, to put it into context, 1885-1940, Rabbi Dr. Vera of Dove Rebbe. You heard from Rabbi Ganag, he was the Krenahili, his father died young, and since Gavaldi, I have to say time because the hour is late and I have a world that I want to say, so I'm not translating with my speak two languages, none of them correctly, but nevertheless, I trust Yiddish and Hebrew go by. So Rabbi Rebbe, but since Gavaldi in the shoes and covering, he was learning, he was Nehri. He went to Telus for 6 months. He always had an affinity for Telus. And I'll let you in a secret. That's why Rabbi Arnis became a Rosh Yeshiva here. Remember Rabbi Yosef Leib Arnis? Do you remember Rabbi Shmuel Eliezer Volk? They were Telusha. He offered Rabbi Mother Katz and Rabbi Eliezer Meir Bloch. When they were stranded in America, Rabbi Rebbe wanted them to come to the Yeshiva. All right, they went down to Cleveland, the rest is history. Spent 6 months in Telus, he couldn't, he was an Hebrew, he was a bit on the wild side. He and Rabbi Silva both had that personality. They were constantly in motion. I went back to Tufnet, then he got involved with the movement that conquered the world 110 years ago, 120 years ago. Every Jewish boy, I once had a long talk with some people who lived there, and they told me, it's like any kid growing up at your time who was not in Bnei Akiva did not have a youth. Any kid who was not in the Bund, what later becomes communism, Bolshevikism, and you've got to remember, communism is very powerful. There are two people sitting here, I'm looking at them, one of them is worth $10 billion, and one of them is worth only $10,000. Is that right? These are two human beings. One goes to a doctor, has to wait in line for 10 hours to get an appointment, the other one in a minute gets an appointment. The communist system, beautiful in theory. In practice, let me tell you, it's one when I spent much time in communist Russia. In practice, wow, couldn't get off the floor. But Rebbe was attractive. 1905, you can check the Bible, the book on Bernard Rebbe. I did a lot of research to verify what Mrs. Rebbe was telling me. He winds up in jail in Kavka. It was the revolution. Everyone was revolting against the Tsar. The Tsar cracked down, gets out of jail, and he says, the heck with it. On the boat, he already had half brothers from the United States. As a matter of fact, no, look, the president of Hebrew Union College was Rabbi Rebbe's nephew. It was a half-brother's son. Rabbi Rebbe, he divorced his wife. He didn't want to give a get. Russell, what does he have to give a get? He's a reformed Jew. Rabbi Rebbe pleaded with him to give a get. There shouldn't be mamzeder in the family. Rabbi Rebbe arrives in America just the way I arrived in America, just the way I went to Yeshiva Srikitz Kohana on that time, I think, where it was Rabbi Rebbe goes to the yeshiva, sits there and learns, and there was a rabbi in Philadelphia who used to come once a week and play the good local yeshiva. He was the most Americanized of the European rabbanim. I've been privileged to teach his descendants in Bristol, Rav Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal. Thomas, new student was here. New Dr. Meredith. By the way, I have to tell you, I'm a third generation American, and I only owe my Yiddish to Sempo Subihara, Zeta Sai. Do you read me? Seventh grade in Sri Lanka. My Rebbe was Rav Gesh Yankelovich. He didn't know one word of English. Eighth grade in Sri Lanka, Rav Tenor Fish in Zeichet Tzadik Lavracha. I took Hesh in Zeichet Tzadik Lavracha to his first baseball game. I told Rav Tenor Rebbe, I made your son into an American today. He saw Joe DiMaggio play center field. Rav Tenor looked at me, I had no other hope, but he had confidence in me, at least I wouldn't corrupt the son. Kedach Reislerman, swim or sink. So the Ryan comes and Levinthal, brings him to Philadelphia. You don't have to learn any yeshiva anymore. It's America, be my assistant. Get degrees. You know that Rabbi Leventhal's children became world famous. One was a judge, one was a conservative rabbi. They education. Rabbi Rebbe winds up, Philadelphia, U of P. Masters, drops and opens, interested in Chachmat Yisrael. I'll talk about this on Wednesday, the difference what we're talking about. When we say Wissenschaft des Judentum, he gets the first PhD from Dropson, which today is the graduate school in Semitic studies of the University of Pennsylvania, writing on Talmudic literature and its relationship to the halacha. And now, you need a shidduch. Rav Moshe Rick, who here remembers the name Rav Moshe Rick, who here grew up in the Bronx, he was our postdoc in the Bronx, in East Bronx, today at Kiva, we went to Rav Moshe Rick. Every shot we had, when I learned in Lakewood, and they wanted to kill me and talk about me because I defended Mizrahi. So So Reb Moshe Bikson defended me, said, I can say Eitim Anadah, Mizrachi Min Ken Mizrachim, the East Bronx, say Zayin Elik, and everything my father tells them they do. And Reb Moshe Bik was a graduate of this yeshiva, don't forget that. So Reb Moshe Bik once told me with this angelic smile, remember his eyes winkled, ah, the shmeichel. So he tells me, you should know, the first shidduch done in America was Rabbi Reverend Sarah Travis. And wow, who was Sarah Travis? She was the girl from Governor Yellow, Ohio, a wealthy family in the oil business. Chabad, Lubavitch Roots. And very good. She went, you know, there was no day school, just a yeshiva, just a public school. There were no yeshivas for girls, no day schools, Marietta, Ohio. But there was a rabbi in Pittsburgh, Rabbi Yonam Zivitz. He wrote on the Yerushalmi, by the way, a big Talmud Chacham. He ran Leventhal, he ran Rebel, Philadelphia. And every 2 months he would go to Marietta, Ohio, paskining up the shilas that they had. And he made the shidduch between Bernard Revel and Chaim Sarah Travis, Susie Travis. That shidduch was successful. And the Travis family brought Bernard Revel into the oil business. He winds up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They go out to the oil fields 5 o'clock in the morning, and if you're here in the oil field business, you know what I'm talking about. You can't work by day, it's too hot. The day begins at 5, by 12 o'clock you're home, that's it. The rest of the day is 6-11, the old conditioned poet, everyone in New York knew about this genius out in Oklahoma, who's a big Talmud Chacham, who's the Erech Shemayim, that has a PhD from Dropsy. And they pleaded with him, come to New York. And you have to understand, sometimes you get a challenge in life, I understand what that means. You get a challenge, it's like God is reaching out to you. You cannot say no. In 1915, Rabbi Reverend relocated. He took no salary from the yeshiva until his family lost their money well into the 1920s, when Standard Oil used methods that would be illegal today to capture the oil petroleum market. No salary. The Travis family totally supported Rabbi Reverend. Now he has organized high school. Today, look at me, big deal. There are high schools in New York, and yeshiva high schools in Boston, and in Cleveland, and in Los Angeles, and in Houston, and in Dallas. Wherever Jews live today, there are high schools. You know what it meant to organize NTA to convince the Board of Regents that it's a serious operation? Shelley Safdie, that was his name at the time. Later, you recognized the name as Shelley Sapphire. Why he changes his name, pick it up on one of W. Jerusalem, Nehemiah Kefir, gives lectures on Monday on the history of Torah in the United States these last 2 years. You'll pick it up on one of those lectures, not fanatic. But Rabbi Reverend remains very loyal to Shelley Safdie because he had a PhD from Columbia and he was able to move mountains. And January 1916, the greatest yeshiva high school in the world, I'm a little prejudiced, but I'm a 1955 graduate, opens his doors, and the rest is history. But not only that, Rabbi Rebel comes into the yeshiva, he now has a high school, and he looks around, and this these other ones exist. And Larry, and Larry does, and Larry Bahim, and Larry Bahar. You want to get smicha? You go to a rabbi on the east side, Rabbi Shalom Yachmi, gives smicha to many people studying at the retreats. Rabbi Revel reorganizes the yeshiva. Classes, curriculum, rebellion, Yoredeya. And 1919, a red letter day in the history of the United States, the five first Muslim get smicha from the yeshiva. But this is unique because these five Muslim didn't study Yoredeya in Europe. They studied on the east side. Organized curriculum results, and one of the five graduates is the first American-born Muslim of Yeshivas of Yitzchak Hanan. We're sitting here in Washington Heights. Can anyone give me his name? His rabbinate was a few blocks from here. Saul B. Friedman, young Israel of what was his school? Washington Heights. If I can be corrected, if anyone here grew up in Washington Heights, Saul B. Friedman, lawyer, I believe he was born in Pittsburgh, I yet knew him. He was one of the five who smuck on the Rabbi Revel, sang and danced with them. But my dear friends, we now come to the most important moment in the history of Torah in the United States. If your humble servant, since 1978, when the Gris Torah began a formal program, I'm proud to say I was appointed to the faculty by the students, not by New York, not by anyone but the students who said, what, you're going to be in this building and not teach us? So, without going into great detail, I had to teach something that no one else can teach. And I developed a concept of fusing traditional learning, shas and poiskim, with salt and pepper of what I picked up from Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, a broader vision. And I began a course in the history of responsible literature, a course that I had not repeated lecture until today. Last Sunday at this time, I was very deeply involved in a movement, this entire year I devoted to why Jews kill each other over an acre in Flatbush and Borough Park. Next year, those of you who sing God Save the Queen, I'll be devoting a year to why Jews kill each other over an acre in Kennedy and Golden Screen. There are different reasons why. I like it. How does a little American kid, a third generation bum who used to see Joe DiMaggio play, we compass with us? I can show you a rebellion. I don't go further, I don't want to speak about myself. You know what it goes back to? September 1st, 1922. President Joel, do you celebrate September 1st, 1922 in this yeshiva? If you don't, it is sinful. What happened on that day? Rabbi Rebbe was always upset. You check me out. Rabbi Rebbe was always upset that the Europeans looked at America, not a yeshiva, but by yeshiva America. What the heck can come out of America? Well, what makes the yeshiva? I have news for you. Tell us that Cleveland has a tremendous campus. The suburb, Whitefield, have you been there lately? Campus is something. There are reasons why. How come? I spent the Shabbos here. I couldn't believe the crowds of students, the spirit, the singing. I pleaded with people, don't come to my share. It was one Shabbos physically. I spoke in Har Sinai and Rabbi Schnau, wonderful young man, Rabbi Eichmann Schnau. He says that the luncheon, Rabbi Kessler will be giving me sheer. Everyone should come, and I got men. No one should come. Go back and go to sleep. What are you in the shame of the Shabbos time? What a crowd. What an interaction between a Rebbe and a Talmid. But what makes the yeshiva? Faculty. You can have a place, beautiful, Waldorf Astoria, like the one that just opened in Yerushalayim. But if you don't have the faculty to submit the yeshiva, this chassidus, a dichin of belts of us that I have to go to a belts of yeshiva, whether I like it or not. And if then I get a belts, I go to Gera, or to one of the Tonkhi to me. Although Chabad Baruch Hashem today is broadened, and I can tell you I saw Chabad and all over the place, and the why you see this past Shabbat. Literature, you go where there's a Rebbe and you can gain something from it. And my Rebbe was determined to bring over someone from Europe who would come to America not to raise money, not to raise funds, not to be a schnorrer, not to be brush up, but to sit in East Broadway and give shape over. And he hit upon, and I write about him, some of you know my third and fourth books, the fifth and sixth on the Rav, the third and fourth on a couple of a collection of published writings. So I have some biographies there. One of them is on Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Meshit Ha'ivri. The Meshit Ha'ivri, the Talmud, the Mufav, Rav Chaim Brisker. The Chavrut of Rabbi Yehuda Leib Foyer of Holyoke, Massachusetts, who may very well be the greatest Talmud Chacham ever to live in the United States. The Rebbe used to shiver when he saw Rav Foyer. Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik wouldn't pass in a shayla of difficulty without considering Rabbi Yehuda Leib. Rabbi Lazer Silva, who was a buffy oxen, needed a source, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Foyer. Brought the Meshitta to America, and the Meshitta caught on. And I quote to you, you can get the source of the Rebbe. Do you want to know who the Meshitta was? The Yeshiva Rabbinic Alumni held the convention. Reporters came from the Yiddish press to within 5-6 daily Yiddish newspapers in the United States, in New York. And the reporter couldn't believe it. A table was set with Kol Tuv Mitzrayim. This was the roaring 20s. Oh, the food glistened. And no one was at the table. And the reporter takes a look in the corner is an old, a middle-aged man with a patriarchal beard, with a hakarat panim. And 30, 35 students are around him, leaning forward to catch every word. Only after an hour and 15 minutes, when the major had finished his pupil, did the students take food. That was the major. The reporter couldn't believe it. And once the major came, of course, to the Gemara says in Shabbos, Eim Azal Yisrael, whatever that means, but on a simple literal interpretation, Kaimasel Habnish, he died in 1928 of Astima Lidus of the gum that is cured today with one shot of antibiotics. It was in mid-50s. Rabbi Rebbe was heartbroken. Reb Shimon Shach, his old Rebbe from Tel Aviv, was in America. Reb Shimon came to the yeshiva for a year, and after Reb Shimon went back to Europe, he went after Reb Moshe Soloveitchik in December 1929. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik gave his first shiur in the yeshiva, and in 1957, a little American wise out a kid named Gani Rothkopf, who led petitions with Sherry Blau, Rabbi Blau, some of my other friends here, we demanded from Rabbi Belkin, we know more than all our rabbis. What chutzpah we had? We can only learn by the Rav. And the Rav had to start a college here. And could you imagine a little kid like me got on the 36 bus, traveled for 18 minutes, got off and walked 4 or 5 little blocks. I sat down, the Rav couldn't get in or get out without my standing up. The picture hangs in 101, I couldn't believe it. I walked into 101, schapen around Amincha, I see my picture on the wall. Wow! Okay, Rabbi Rashi intended me yesterday I should identify everyone in the picture, which I was able to do. But that's how Torah came to America.
That's how our vistas broadened. That's how we weren't satisfied just with 100 daf gemara and a little yaradeya. A little kid said, I want to be like the Meshitter. I want to be like Rav Shimon Shtrop. I want to be like Rav Meshach Soloveitchik. I want to be like Moshe the Rebbe and Rav Kotel Halevi. But life marches on. And these same kids who were graduating Talmudical Academy were going to City College. Those that had money were going to Columbia. These kids were bright. They demanded a college education. They were at home in general studies. There was no conflict. It was a beautiful atmosphere. You can call it synthesis, or a term that Rakeh developed in Jerusalem with 22 years of lectures on the Rebbe and the Kollel in the Monday class, harmonious coexistence. I think the Rebbe would have agreed with my term, looking to volume 2 of the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, where I quote the Rebbe word by word how he describes this concept of yeshiva kach. They were clamoring. And Rabbi Revel was a man of vision, and he announced a $5 million campaign. They bought up here from Washington Heights. It was farmland all the way down to the Harlem River, Lower Lane. I don't want to cause anyone aggravation, but we cried in Israel when once again the Yeshiva is selling off the very buildings, the very land. They sold it off in the 30s, and they had to sell it off again in the 2010s, which is a disgrace, because there are enough wealthy Orthodox Jews that should rise and support this magnificent institution 100% plus. But life is life. The New York Times laughed at Rabbi Revel, $5 million, the Reformed Press went crazy, these weeds of Eastern Europe. What are they, crazy? And three Jews got up. Harry Fisher, Nathan Lamport, Mendel Gottesman, $100,000 apiece. Afterwards, each one gave another $100,000, and Mendel Gottesman said, the yeshiva is my life, I will mortgage my life to support the yeshiva. And they raised in pledges, underlined in pledges, $3 million. And you know the results? The beautiful campus where Rav Yitzchak Halevi Herzog, chief rabbi of the state of Israel, visited America in the early 1940s. I write about this in the Suvi era. And I write about this in a monograph on Rabbi Herzog, which is published in one of my two volumes of Rakaf et Adam. And Rabbi Herzog is walking on Amsterdam Avenue, and they show him the main academic center. He breaks out and cries. He couldn't believe that there could be such a beautiful building dedicated to Torah Hashem Tzimtzum. But Ein Mazal Yisrael. 1929, October, the stock market crash, the $3 million in pledges are not even worth the paper they are written on. And the last 11 years of Rabbi Revel's life, tremendous struggle. Rav Moshe Aaron Palev described to me how he came to visit Rabbi Revel in his house, and when Rabbi Revel took off his jacket, his shirt was torn. That's the level which he lived. He was diffident to take a pen from the yeshiva. The dedication, indescribable, kept the yeshiva together. There were strikes in the secular faculty, high school, college, not the yeshiva faculty. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, first of all, how are you allowed to strike? A Rebbe's not allowed to take a salary. Right or wrong? I don't know. I get paid, I imagine, for setting up my room before I teach, for setting up the microphone. Fine. A Rebbe's not allowed to take a salary. Right or wrong? There's so many children. I can't go into a locket now. But Mani Bechinim Achatah Bechinim, right? It's an open Gemara.
Moshe said, if we'll try, Rabbi Revel will take senior students and they'll teach the classes. The students will like the senior students teaching better than the old-fashioned rabbi from Europe. We won't have jobs left. So they get struck. And then the Holocaust coming in, and poor Rabbi Revel, so many requests, none quoted immigrant visas, save us, spare us time, depressions. No, my dear students, we're sitting here in Washington Heights. Of all the people Rabbi Revel saved, can you give the name of the most prominent individual whose life was saved by Rabbi Revel's invitation to teach Bible at Yeshiva College? Rabbi Dr. Joseph Breuer. Right or wrong? Are there any Yekins here? Don't be ashamed to admit it, because I have 6 Yekin grandchildren, and when we start talking, you'll find out that we're related, interrelated. It's inevitable, because it's a very common German family. Rabbi Dr. That's a whole story, because I got a letter from Rabbi Dr. Jacob Roy. I'll tell the story very briefly, because it hits home. And he corresponded to me, I'm doing my research, and in his letter, he maledicts Yeshiva University. My father, he owed his life, he admits it, but he did not approve then, he does not approve now of Yeshiva University. It's right with me. All right. A little tension, I wrote back. I didn't let him slap me too hard, but we slapped each other. Do you know that I was privileged? Anyone here? You don't have to believe me. Check it out. Rabbi Jacob Breuer didn't marry. He finally retires. He marries his widowed cousin. He comes to Israel. He's a different person. He's so happy. And Max Wild, he said, a top yekkers, takes him to hear me see the refuge. I do the talk on Rav Shishuk Rodish at the end of the talk. There, you can check it next month, because I don't even believe what I'm saying, but it happened. Rabbi Jacob Royer runs up and kisses me, hugs me, and he says, Rabbi Kefet, I'm giving you money. I want you to buy tickets. I'm arranging for you to get this talk in Washington Heights. To hear about Dr. Shurin. And without batting an eyelash, I say, one little problem, my life insurance is not paid off. He was hysterical. But you can understand what we're talking about. Rabbi Revel continued to teach. November of 1940, he had a stroke in the middle of teaching in the classroom, the Shir and Hoshi Mishpat. He died December 2nd, Beit Kislev, 1940. Fascinatingly enough, Reb Aaron Kotler's yahrzeit, Beit Kislev. Reb Moshe Aaron Peleiv's yahrzeit, Beit Kislev. So this briefly is Rabbi Revel's life, his achievement, his thinking, the newness of what Rabbi Belkin, and that's a lecture unto itself, the relationship between Rabbi Sullivan and Rebel. It develops into the magnificent institution that we are part of today in Griscolel, in Yerushalayim. But I want to end off the lecture in a few minutes, and I apologize in advance. It's an ambitious story, but it's true. And I already had a title. If I wanted to be an Rebbe, some of you know the title I had. You need a chutzla rutzim. You can't be the Jerusalem Rebbe, the Haifa Rebbe, but the neighborhood of Rebbe. That sounds good. The problem is, I have a chassidim, but I never been a Jewish. All right. You'll understand shortly. I want to thank from the bottom of my heart the 3 wonderful people who introduced me. Rabbi Gennady had a kashrut meeting, so we had to leave. Rabbi Jupiter, I've given you all the titles. President Richard Joe and his wife. To me, they're the parents of 3 lovely students that I taught.
and particularly Avery got me into a lot of trouble. He changed my life. I don't know how much he realized it, but the only faculty member of yours who lives in the building. I always tell people I do not work there. I live there. There's a big difference. Every day I spend 2 hours answering emails that come in from all over the world. People listen. It was Avery, my Talmud, Rabbi Avery, Joel, my Talmud, the Kollel, who said, Rebbe, you should put your shirm on why you told her. I didn't even know what a computer was, what a website was. I had a Talmud asking, I said, this is the heck for what you want. The rest is history. I want to thank Professor David Berger, who's been of help to my son as well. I can only tell you that line I wanted to tone down, but a father-in-law can't get away with it. But you notice when you mentioned it, he toned it down slightly. So I am very appreciative of your scholarship and your help and our relationship. Morty and Nikki Kask, I need not tell you, we go back a very long way. Nikki and Marco were classmates. I taught two of their children. And we're just good friends in mutual admiration society. But there's one person here in the audience who, Gedaliah Kieferer, do I see him? I spoke to him earlier. And Rachma, I want you to know this is the student, the virtual student. And I'll be very honest, to come into my teaching class, I'm not mature enough to appreciate the Rebbe in his total configuration. Someone who's been through life, it's a different story. And I picked up students from that website that are devoted beyond words. And this gentleman, wife, wonderful children in our institution here, he is the one who started the movement to republish Rebbe and Silva. And I thank him from the bottom of my heart. But now I want to conclude. In Washington to Washington, I devote about 4 or 5 chapters to the 10 years that Malka and I lived a double life. We were younger. I don't know how we did it physically. No one had any idea that we worked for the branch of the Mossad that dealt with Russian Jewry. But you don't have to believe my book now. The Mossad came out with a book, but it did have a Lama. And when Malka and I went to the book launch a few months ago, we fainted, basically. Everyone jumped on us. And I have to tell you, I know what I do for the Mossad and what went on in Russia. To see that it's appreciated, this was beyond words. But I want to be honest with you. Before the Mossad contacted me, and I described how they contacted me, it's both in the Mossad book they described my phone conversation, and in my book, Washington. They did a security check on me. How do I know they did a security check? I know what happened afterwards when Malka and I had sent over 200 people to Russia. What would happen from the time we would suggest someone to the time they could go, if they could go. Do you know that today I couldn't be involved? I would fund the security check. And the reason is very simple. My eldest son-in-law, Renato, was a career officer, went on to very high rank in the army. I don't want to go further. I'm a security risk. Because my son-in-law may have told me things, which inevitably he did. I remember one night, how can I recall, in the 80s, he took us out into Terrace 12 midnight, and he showed us a night sight he was developing for Merkava 3-2 at the time. And he said, look into it. I look into it. The whole valley, the view of the valley of the cross, pardon the expression, the whole valley became dead. So I know something, willy-nilly. I'm a security risk. My dear friends, I described in my Vahim Washington and in the Vahim Nai, you mentioned the Vahim, the legacy of Bernard Lander. You have a similar description there.
when Bernie Lander approached me, I was working on my doctorate completing courses, and I go in, Pearl Cotton, the recorder of the graduate school, she ran the graduate school. Without her, Bernie Rebel would not have survived us. Bernie Lander, you know, was a professor, was a genius, but he was in three places at once. And she said to me, Arnold, you better go in and talk with Dr. Lander. I'm going to make an appointment. You've got to get a copy. You have to start. I went in. I'm going to write out the exam. I gave a whole proposal. Many years later, a lady did that topic at Hebrew University, the daughter of a big thing. So Bernie says, Arnold, I like what you're saying, but I want to talk with you. I have to consult. We may have another project for you. 2 weeks later, I come in, and Bernie Lander says to me, my Rebbe has no monument. His children have not married. I want you to do my Rebbe's monument. And he assigns to me Bernard Revel, and he puts his hands on my shoulders, and he starts to cry. We reacted this in Yerushalayim, the home of Toby Livin, Toby and her brother. We both cried. That's absolutely exactly what happened. Do you know that today I could not do a doctorate on Bernard Revel? And it all goes back 2-3 years ago. I'm walking in Geula, on the way to my son-in-law's dental office in the Haredi lands. And as my wife in Geula, much to my wife's chagrin, I stop at every bookstore to see the latest. And right in the Rehov Malachi, which you know, that big bookstore, I take a look. Interesting book, Yesaya Shumi, by Yitzchak Yochanan Gibralta, a memoir of Kafka. Now, all the years, my late mother, who lived to 98, died 2 years ago. My mother was a Hakni of Megahakta China. Her mother's family, Mazay, Rum Mazay, Obkitya, Kalvert, Kalvarsky, 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 and she would tell me stories, but I'm an American kid. I just saw my grandparents assimilating. That year, I always had two grandfathers, one who learned from the Lajan, and by the time I knew him, he went to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. My other Zayda, who barely knew anything, at the tenth, the dominant, he knew how to dominate, was about Tfilah, but at the Mishka tenth, up French, he's a better. My other Zayda never was Machal Shabbos all the myriad of years he was in the United States. So I didn't pay much attention. I start flipping the pages of the book. I see Rabbi Revel's picture. And then I take a look. Revel, Kalvarsky. I say, what's going on here? I bought the book immediately. I went through it in a few days' time. Hundreds of pages. I couldn't believe what I'm reading. I called my colleague, my Talmud Rabbeinu, known to me, came in on the night as a kid. I was old. I helped him, a brilliant doctorate, Professor Shlomo Stampa of Hebrew University. His doctorate is on the Lashon, Telem Shem Slabotka, a beautiful piece of work. I called him, and he knew. He said, call the author. The author was well into his 90s. I called him, I wrote him, he corresponded, we spoke. My dear friends, I want to tell you, two people descend, and they pronounce it in Kovna, the Kalvarisky family. One of the descendants is Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel. Another descendant, you are listening to his voice at this very moment. If I am correct, Rabbi Revel's grandparents are my great, great grandparents. I may be skipping a generation or two, maybe eight. I don't have the time to waste and trace it out. But Yitzchak Yochanan Gibralta, who was part of the family, knew my family and all the stories my mother told me were true. and to give the Gebenkite to Yiddishkeit, and the great grandfather from the architect who wouldn't build on Shabbos and wouldn't build the church, he certified all the stories. So it turns out, and if you have the Revel book, you'll see the introduction, that 48 years later, I learned that I built a monument for my own cousin. I deserve no credit whatsoever. How did Archie Bunker say it? All in the family. Let me end off, as I do in Yerushalayim, my dear students, thank you for honoring me with your presence. Until we meet again, in health and happiness, thus the diamond.